Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile.
With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hello and welcome again to Really with Tom and Dave. I am Dave. It's a little tricky to pronounce, but it's Dave. And of course, in the other window, you'll find Tom.
That's me. Hey, yo, what's up?
How you doing, Tom?
Good.
Yeah. And now, this week we have a guest who is a very old friend of mine, and we recorded this last week. It's not like we do a wardrobe change for these intros,
but we could.
Yeah, but so we had our a very old friend of mine, Blaine Kapach, come on to discuss his UFO experience.
Yeah, Blaine is awesome. Kapach is an American comedian, writer, and actor known for his unique and often surreal style of comedy. He's made appearances on various comedy shows, podcasts, and television programs. His notable works include his involvement as a writer and performer on the sketch comedy show Mad TV, which was awesome, and aired on Fox. He also co-hosted the podcast, The Long Shot Podcast, where he engaged in discussions about life, comedy, and personal experiences alongside his fellow comedians. In addition to his comic endeavors, Blaine's also known for his interest in and knowledge about UFOs and extraterrestrial phenomenon. He's been out open about his fascination with the subject and has incorporated references to UFOs and related topics into his comedy. Has an experience also to share with us on this episode. So let's get started. It's a great conversation.
Blaine.
Here we are.
How are you? Now, have you guys met before, Tom?
No, I have not met. I just met Blaine seconds ago on this beautiful screen.
Because we have been friends since the 90s. I believe.
Yeah.
Like going back,
all
I think
20th century friends.
Yes. Back to, I remember meeting you, I think, when I first started coming down to Largo, when I first moved to LA.
The old Largo on Fairfax.
Yeah. And maybe even shows before that. Maybe remember there used to be, was it Pedro's? Was that?
Yeah, it was Pedro's. It was at a place called the Onyx for a while.
Yeah.
It started at the Lava Lounge of all places.
Right, yes.
And it was hosted by Jeremy Kramer, and then it was sort of taken over by Josh DiDonato, remember him?
Yes.
And then
we used to hang out with Andy Dick all the time.
Oof.
Yeah.
Yeah, Dick was always hanging around. but then it ended up at Largo, and then Lisa Langang took over. You know, but I guess that was when I met you.
Yeah, those are great. Yeah, because I know I knew you, and I was saying to Tom earlier that when I met Chrissy, who you may know, I married almost a couple of times, really. I met Chrissy because I went down to see the show that you and Paul F. Tompkins and Greg Behrendt were in. So I was going that turned out to be something called White Trash Wins Lotto.
Yes. That was fun. Yeah. I remember, and you took over for Paul F.
Mm.
And you were the bad executive, and we did Do What We Want to the Cunt because She's Only a Chick.
Yes. And
it's delightfully problematic show.
And I overcame my terror of singing in public so that I could be there and hit on Chrissy at the time. That was my point.
That's good.
You were successful in both, I think. It all worked out.
Yeah.
Yeah. But that was fun. Those old Largo days with the white trash stuff.
Yeah, it was the birth of the LA alternative comedy scene. It was a fun and the alt mixing of the alt music scene and the alt comedy scene at that place was pretty exciting at the time.
I really liked that because I was like John Bryan would come up to me on Friday and he would go, "Hey, Elliot Smith is here. You got to see Elliot Smith. Or Robin Hitchcock is here. You got to see Robin Hitchcock." Like Beck and Beth Wharton would be exchanging songs. It was really amazing.
Yeah.
It was a great time. There was just such a pollination. It felt like Situationist France or something.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was a great time. But I've known you all these years, and only
all these years.
But I had no idea that you had an interest and an experience in the UFO world.
It's true. It's very true.
Yeah.
Well, what's your
not in the UFO world, but just here on Earth.
Yes.
Yeah. Right. Their visitation of us. Did you grow up like believing in this stuff? I mean, what was your introduction to it, or was there a moment of aha for you, like with this phenomenon, or was it an experience that started it off?
That changed it? No, I was like, well, I was in fifth grade when it happened. This was in 75. And I was never had a reason to not believe in flying saucers or aliens. I was always very open-minded about stuff and very science fiction-y. But this was still like pre-Star Wars stuff. Mm. So, but I was science fiction-minded and very, and just a little inquisitive kid.
Yeah.
But the sighting was accidental.
Yeah. But you were culturally aware of the UFO phenomena.
Yes.
As a kid.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Of course. Betty and Barney Hill and all that stuff was happening. And Martian Hop and Sped Up Records and people, you know, everybody had an antenna and My Favorite Martian. It was all, culture was soaked in flying saucers. So there was no doubt about it. That was, I think back when I was a kid, there was still like, oh yeah, canals on Mars. People were, if we get there, there'll be canals there.
Yeah. Before Viking,
there was still hope.
Before Viking,
when I was a kid.
We didn't know. Before Viking actually landed, there was still going, well, maybe something's going on.
Yeah. Could be like, you know, buildings with columns and stuff overgrown with some sort of Martian ivy. No, nothing like that.
Yeah. No, I remember being just going, oh, that's cool when Viking, and then being hugely disappointed by everything it sent back.
Yeah, it's like it landed in Bakersfield.
Terrible place. I know, right? It's just, it's the dull as nothing going on up there. Sadly.
Mm. Except for the Buck Owens Crystal Palace is pretty good. Other than that.
What was your your fifth grade, you have some context for the UFO stuff? I mean,
sure.
But you're not looking for something, right? You're something.
No, it was here's long story short. I had just come back from a weekend hunting with my brother, and I had found a baby ringneck snake, and I brought it back. And it escaped in the trunk, and they couldn't find it. We couldn't find it anywhere. I went home, and then my brother called and said, "We found the snake in the sleeping bag. Come get your snake." So my mom and dad and I get in our car.
Where are you, by the way? What are you?
I'm in Pennsylvania.
Oh.
I'm in Dallastown, Pennsylvania. So it's a suburb of York. It's kind of Amish country, big rolling green hills.
I'm a Philly guy. Yeah. Lots of
okay.
You know, yeah. So okay.
I just drove across Pennsylvania with my daughter yesterday. I'd never been through it. Beautiful country.
It is beautiful.
Very beautiful. A little scary.
Place. Yeah, it's 1972 there all the time.
Yeah,
that's for sure. But I was. We get in the car, our old Volkswagen 412, and we were driving down the alley to the road to go see my brother, who lives off in the countryside. With his wife and my niece, and there's this light, and my mom keeps saying, "What is that? Is that is that Venus? What is that? And my dad keeps saying, that's Venus. It's Venus, Gene. That's not Harold. That's not Venus. I remember sitting in the back, Harold, that's not Venus. And it kept getting brighter and brighter. We get to the end of the alley and there's nobody around. It was strangely quiet. No cars or any traffic or anything. Small town, very small town. But this thing goes over us, a triangle, a black triangle. It had a large white light in each corner and a row of colored lights across the back. And I remember it was just hanging in the sky, moving slower than it should have been to be flying. I remember thinking, "This it can't be flying." It wasn't floating, though, and it looked heavy. It looked like it had weight. And it just moved very slowly and very quietly over us and went up the alley behind us. And my mom was like, what is this? Harold, let's get out of here. And my dad's like, let's try to get out. And I was trying to get out of the car to get a better look at it. My dad wanted to leave. So we drive away and we're talking about it. And we get my snake. We tell my brother and he's sort of smiling at
us. Is this daytime, nighttime? What time of day is this?
This is nighttime. This is, I guess, after dusk, sun's down, 7-8 o'clock, sun's down.
But you're getting a sense of this thing is enough, like there's enough, between the lights, you're able to make the shape, or it's close enough to you that you're able to like see the shape or the lights make the shape, do you think?
It was a little of everything. I didn't make out any details, but you could tell the shape. You could, the lights trace the shape. And it was definitely a different color than the sky behind it. And we all saw it. We were like, what the? There was definitely question marks over our heads the whole time. And, but it flew up behind us. We go to pick up my stuff, my snake. And, we were driving back. And when we're right back on these back Pennsylvania roads, you know what those are like. Mm-hmm. And, over in the distance, we saw it again. And it was moving in the opposite direction. And it was very low, a little higher than it was with us. It looked like it was maybe 5 stories up when it passed over us. And it was big, like half a city block, maybe not huge, but it was a large thing. And but we saw it again moving very slowly in the opposite direction. And it was moving with purpose. That's what I remember thinking, that it was going somewhere. Both times we saw it, it wasn't just floating along or drifting, and it wasn't making any sort of propeller noises or any sort of, you know, like novelty Eat It Joe's blinking lights noises or anything like that. But that was our sighting, and we thought about it. My mom wrote it down. I have a copy of it somewhere. It's buried in the garage, I think, but I have her handwritten affidavit of what we had witnessed the next day.
Yeah.
But anyway, that was that. Long story short, that was it. I thought it was cool as shit. I was trying to get it out, and whoa, my mom was trying to pull me back in the car. But it was wonderful.
And did dad and mom have a theory about, or was just that was a UFO? I mean, that was it.
No, I know my mother took an interest in UFOs after that. She was, you know, bored housewife, so she got really into it. And I think maybe 5 or 6 months later, she went to a convention or a lecture or a seminar about UFOs and flying saucers and stuff over in Lancaster, Pennsylvania.
Yeah.
And she stood up and volunteered the story, said what had happened. And a bunch of other people, I think like 3 or 5 other people, were like, we saw something very similar on those days or close to those days. It was moving the same craft or whatever it was, but other people had seen it and had filed reports of it. So it was a thing that had happened, and I did not doubt it happened.
Yeah. Well, and it's interesting that you saw it twice, that you saw like two legs of your trip, because, you know, so often.
Yeah. Like it was going back for its keys or something.
Yeah.
It's Snake. What happened to Snake?
He died. He was a little baby, and I should not have taken him out of the woods. It was a sad learning experience for me on that level too. But that's a different podcast, you guys.
Well, you know, we're not picky about
that's
it.
Our snake killing podcast.
I named him Ringo. But that was a mistake, and then he was too small to eat anything.
Yeah. Oh,
but he
poor
was
Ringo.
Beautiful little guy.
Yeah, there's
anyway. If it wasn't for him, we wouldn't have seen a flying saucer.
Yeah,
or a triangle.
And yeah, did your mom continue to like sort of take an interest in the subject, like over the years?
She sort of stayed arm's length hobbyist, you know, reading about it in magazines and stuff. And I don't think she kept going to any more seminars or anything like that. She was really into comic Kahootech. You know what I mean? She's following fads. But it was weird. Can I say the other thing too about this thing that happened that I remember more than anything else? Is the next day I went to school and I told everybody, I was very excited to tell my classmates what had happened. And they laughed at me. They mocked me. I could not believe it. Like I was, gather around everybody. This cool thing happened. We saw this spaceship and everybody laughed, including my teacher. They were pointing and laughing like in a TV movie, just mocking me. And I was like, what the? It was very strange. They were all like, yeah, of course that didn't happen to you. You're making it up.
Yeah.
So you were all kind of bizarre. beautifully programmed. That's like the exact, you know, sort of reaction that our government would want. You know, it's like, shame him immediately.
All had weird white hair and glowing eyes too. I don't know what had happened to them.
Exactly.
But I just felt it was weird. It was because I'd seen it and my mom and dad saw it. That sort of lent it this official weight. And we were very open about, oh yeah, this bizarre thing flew over us. We didn't know what it was, never seen it, anything like it.
You're ridiculed by your class.
And teacher. And don't
and shamed
that
by your teacher.
And my teacher. An authority figure. Yes. Yeah. I'm assuming it was, you know, it might not have been a very strong teacher.
He was all right, Mr. Reitnauer.
Mr. Reitnauer?
Mr. Reitnauer.
Yeah, like Lee Reitnauer.
I was going to say, or Mr. A Little Laterer.
the other teacher was Mr. Myers, the other fifth grade teacher, and he looked like a big pumped up Starsky. It was a bizarre car, a cop show back in the 70s. My teachers.
Yeah.
Here's what year it was. Welcome Back, Kotter was just starting out when I was in fifth grade. So that's the year this is. I'm 10 years old, being mocked by my classmates for seeing a cool ass spaceship.
Yeah, and thinking they wouldn't do this to Barbarino.
Hey, whoa! What? Wait, whoa! Maybe it was a Phaeton thing. Maybe it was a bunch of guys from the space volcano. What's the guy? Who's the guy in the middle of the Scientology?
Is that Xenu?
Oh. Yeah,
I believe it's Xenu. I'm very low in the rungs over there.
You'll get there. Just stay dedicated.
Yeah,
we support you.
This all gets cut out too, right? But not by us.
We all want to work again. Yeah. But I'm just curious. But so, like, because I said all that, I've known you more than 30 years. I think at this point, and we've never talked about UFOs ever.
No.
So are there times that you talked about over there? Did you just sort of put the experience away in your consciousness?
You know, I like I said, every now and then I'll drop it as something fun and people can believe it or they won't, but it was, it didn't strike me as something that was very strange at the time. It seemed like, oh wow, cool. I saw this. It was like seeing a pot of dolphins or something. Oh wow, I got to see one of those.
Yeah.
But then watching people react to it with the skepticism was new to me, I guess, as a kid.
Yeah.
Seeing it from adults, I expected, but seeing it from other kids was like, what? I felt a little betrayed. I'm over at age 50s.
Yeah, but is it when you fell in love with the sound of laughter?
It was. It was a minute here. Let's take a look at that clip.
So where are you now on this thing? I mean, you like all these this time, you know, you had this, you clearly it's still with you. It's still something that you remember, recall, is certain in your mind occurred. It had to have been something, right? It had to have like,
right.
It had to exist. We're now in this weird time where it's like, I don't know if you, do you follow it now? Do you follow this like weird shit that's happening out there? Or do you just kind of like, if it gets to me and I need to know, like, what's your interest level?
I'm very excited about it. I would love to be alive when aliens come out and go, ta-da! That would be such an amazing moment. And but my whole life, knowing that I had seen something like that, makes me go, well, how did that happen? If it is aliens, or if it is people, you know, things from somewhere else, how did they get here? Why did they get here? What did they have to overcome? Because the older I get, the more I learn about, you know, cosmic rays just degrading everything constantly while you're in outer space, and all sorts of different multi levels of dimensional travel possibilities. Just every day, it seems like there's new stuff that you have to factor into this, to knowing that there's something out there and it figured it out and got here with it.
Well, I just read. I just read today that apparently exposure, being in long-term exposure in space, also destroys your immune system.
Your immune system, yes, and your eyes. Mm-hmm. Like you, if you close your eyes, it just the rays trigger things in your retina, and you just see little sparkles and explosions all night. It's like, I just want to sleep. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I've been in space digging ditches all day. I want to get some sleep.
Yeah,
the rigors of space travel don't seem pleasant at all. Just getting to Mars with human beings seems like they're not going to be much value. They're not going to be in very good shape by the time they get there, much less spend much time on Mars.
Given the
bombardment of radioactivity, I know it seems quite, it's a tough one imagining billions of light years of travel. And it suggests, but at the same time, you saw something. Many, many people are seeing things. Pilots are seeing things. They're talking about these things in congressional hearings. Lots of people are seeing something that's not us. So where do you, in your, do you even, do you have a preference? Do you have a thought or choice of what they are or where they're from or what they could be if they're not kind of just coming here on a straight flight from, you know, Beta Centauri or something?
Now, I would think that realistically that they're set up. They've set up shop in the solar system somewhere, and they have a base of operations here. They came here from wherever. The other possibility is there's some sort of interdimensional travel that they have that, you know, we can't begin to understand, or maybe they travel long term and they're from a system where they're used to that kind of radiation. You know, it's you never know how they're outfitted for stuff. And you know, they, of course, being, you know, the Venusians.
Yes.
You know, whoever they are. I can't help but think of the universe as being the atoms and molecules that build something huge, and that we live on a particle the way that there would be a civilization on a electron in one of our atoms in our fingertip or something. Anyway, man, it's some great meat, bro.
Well, I was gonna say, there's even even like in physics, there are like theories coming out now in mainstream physics that maybe space, that actually distance might not exist. You know, that we may be living in a holographic projection of a multidimensional, like that we may just be some sort of projection, and that everything is really not spaced out, that everything is really right next to everything else. And that
like a TV studio.
Yeah.
Right next to
Yeah, right. And the distance might be an emergent property of maybe I heard once that it might be a property of entanglement, that things that are very tightly entangled may appear to be close together. Things that are loosely entangled appear to be farther apart. So there could be the idea that that distance itself may be an illusion, and maybe that, you know, and also that space-time might not really exist. So, you know, there's a lot of
stuff out of this, Dave. What
yeah.
It's a lot to take in.
More of a communications thing where they're trying to figure out how to use entanglement to send information like a computer, like instantaneous transmission of stuff like that.
Yes, which I guess physicists keep saying, well, in entanglement, you can't use it to transmit information. But then, again, that just means we haven't figured it out yet. You know, it's also the scientific community that keep saying, well, UFOs, it's not possible, so therefore it isn't happening. As opposed to going, well, these things keep happening. Let's try to figure out what makes it possible.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Do you think there's still truth to it? When I was a kid, the top reason that they kept that stuff secret was it would cause such a weird panic in humanity, knowing that we weren't the center of the universe anymore, that there were other better things that were smarter than us, that were doing better than us in school. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And that we wouldn't be able to take being God's special planet.
Yeah.
Which would cause some sort of society unraveling.
Which goes back to Copernicus and later Galileo, that notion that if we let these facts out, that society will crumble. And yet.
Yeah.
And yet people just throughout human history apparently just don't give a shit about anything. So they can be, you know, they can think.
Oh. And we're in Copernicus time, weren't even online. They weren't, yeah, you know, exactly. They weren't getting steady drip of information and news.
But it's always that feeling like people in power always feel like the idiot populace will just freak out and panic. Whereas really, I think the populace keeps going, oh, okay.
Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, you know, I mean, I think that, you know, heretics were getting burned for suggesting, you know, some people were caring about like how things were shifting or the power structures were kind of, you know, forcing their worldview. I mean, I think it used to be like my understanding was they won't tell us because it's invasion. People freak out, we're going to be invaded. Or yeah, I think it's probably also there's something kind of cooler and better out there doing better. And we're, you know, kind of idiots. And I guess there was also a, the religious military thing. That seems to be a real, if you buy into the, which at this point, given all everything, the conversations we've been having, I do buy into there's some debris somewhere being held by someone that has maybe been there for a while, and religious military people were like, fuck it, it's demonic, we don't know what to do with it, just leave it over there and we don't want to trouble our minds with it. However, it seems like it's gotten weirder, like the conversation's gotten weirder, where I almost, because that other stuff I'm like, you know, people can handle that, and people can handle, we've talked about ontological shock, and we've talked about the, you know, the world's now round when it was flat, and the world, you know, we now circle a sun, whereas, you know, all of that was jarring to the people of the time. But it's the weirdness of, as we've just talked about, whether or not distance exists, or whether or not there's something dimensionally. You know, it's one thing to imagine like, okay, they're super far over there and they're coming all the way over here. That doesn't, if there's still a sense of safety. I don't like the up close and personal, like maybe it's much more around us that we can't perceive, fishbowl style. That is something, that's something that the public might be, you know, super freaked out by. If there's something living with us on the planet that has some ability to not be perceived, I don't know. That seems to be where some of the conversation has been going. Whereas, and I'm like, well, I don't know. Maybe that isn't something we should share with the public. Or is it?
Dark matter, people living right next to us. Yeah. Dark matter roommate.
Yeah. Well, since more, what is this? 95% of the universe is dark matter and dark energy. So basically, we don't know. It's basically 95% of the universe is missing.
Well, you know, I was trying to explain it to my kid the other day. The Buckaroo Banzai. You remember Buckaroo Banzai?
Yes.
And that he they invented a thing to travel because atoms are mostly empty space. It's a very clever plot thing that atoms are mostly empty space, the way a solar system is mostly empty space. And if you figure out a way to just drive through that space, you can go through all these different dimensions. Mm. But it's there's so much weird discovery of dimensional stuff happening right now. I fell into a Fermi paradox hole today, actually. You know, looking up, just trying to figure out it's the third body problem. Is the three body problem? It's a Chinese science fiction book, and it's about a future where civilizations all lay very low because other civilizations will come and destroy them because they want to control the resources. There's only 25% of the universe isn't dark matter. You know what I mean? So the reason that advanced civilizations stay, we can't tell where they are, is because they stay quiet. They don't want to get discovered. And Earth is like, hey, here's where I Love Lucy reruns. You know, it's broadcasting out into space. They're going to come and get us because we don't know. It's, you know, like the, that, I guess that, what is that? The dark forest theory is, that's what that's called.
Yes. Yeah.
It's an amazing book, actually. It's really, it's kind of stunning. The description of the invasion or the soon to arrive in 50 years, like, I can't quite
400 years and Earth has time to panic.
Yeah, it was really, and its description of dimensional space, it's an amazing read, and is almost, hard to articulate but it's the most interesting description of an invasion to come, and I haven't gone on to the rest of the series, but
it's alien. You know, alien mathematics and concepts. Because who's to say it's going to be, you know, Klingons with the prosthetic forehead and stuff like that coming at how to speak in English, like I'm doing comedy in Morongo Casino, you guys. Hey, get that speaking English. Hey, what's up with that? It's they're going to be aliens, you know. And what was the other thing too that other civilizations? It's all about timing. They all. You know, it's like fireflies in a field. This one lights and goes out. And this one over here lights up and goes out. This one lights up and goes out. That's civilizations coming and going at different times.
Yes.
And they just, nobody sees up.
Well, if you get past the point of being able to blow yourself up to develop a technology, and then how long does a civilization last? Does it last long enough to develop the technology necessary to get here?
Yeah, to overcome itself.
Yeah. Yeah. And again, we keep using ourselves as a benchmark, you know, and, you know, which might be unfair because we might be the dumbest thing in the universe. So, you know, there might be like other civilizations that been hanging around for millions of years might just be going, oh, we never even thought about blowing ourselves up. It didn't.
Yeah. Why would you do that?
Yeah. We never thought, oh, nuclear power, let's build a bomb. You know,
why would you smoke a cigar in this closed convertible on this road trip to Vegas? Why would you do that?
Yeah.
It's like, I wonder if, I mean, cause we're kind of far out from any sort of galactic center and, us kind of being out here in the sticks a little bit, maybe the stuff that's visiting us is just from our own neighborhood. You know, Alpha Centauri is really close, Proxima Centauri. I get most of my mail from those guys.
Yeah.
they're very close, but you could get here. I don't know. I feel like going faster than light and figuring that stuff out might be the easy part. It's just that, like we were talking about, surviving in outer space as these, you know, naked hermit crabs without shell bodies that we have, you know, and our eyes popping and brain cells.
Yeah, there may be creatures that have evolved to live in space. and, you know, that are impervious to any, all the things that will destroy us.
Well, they would send probes. I think that would be the high-tech civilization would just send probes and AI at this point. Yeah, and they would be, and AI would be able to, you know, like draw you at the beach or draw you hanging out at the Oscars.
Yeah, well, draw you with it could be a different if you're a species that maybe each where individuals live a billion years, you have a different concept of time and travel. It'd be like if a fly was to try and comprehend the idea of, you know, going across town. You know, I only live 24 hours. How am I going to do this? This is not going to work. There's no way anyone can go across town. Mm-hmm. It's physically
impossible. Maybe these life forms are like big tardigrades, like water bears, and they can go into outer space and just kind of turn into a little desiccated husk for a little while. And then when they get to whatever star system they're in, they reconstitute.
Yeah.
Seems, you know, that's what I would do if I were a water bear.
Yeah.
But I love thinking about the Oumuamua. I'm probably pronouncing that wrong, but the
That's correctly. It is correct. Assuming I'm pronouncing it correctly, and I assume I am. Oumuamua. Yeah.
But I love Oumuamua. I love the idea that it came from somewhere else. I love the fact that it came in and accelerated on the way out. I love that it didn't have any sort of comet performance or anything, that it was very, very strange. I wish they could follow it.
Here's the thing that's, and it's interesting you just brought that up, because I agree that that's a whole other, more kind of, logic-based approach to this search and to these questions, which is sort of the Avi Loeb, astrophysics approach, which is there's the one like, fucking dimensions and DMT, and I'll visit the gods and the lizard people, and we'll all sort it out. Though there's the dimensional, but then there's also the kind of, you know, more, let's say, traditional science approach, which is what he's taking, because he just published the first, I think, peer-reviewed paper of the Galileo Project. And the Galileo Project is this kind of esteemed group of scientists led by Avi Loeb. He's the head of Harvard's astronomy department.
Yeah.
And he just did this whole thing where they were dragging the ocean floor off of Papua New Guinea. They were dragging the ocean floor because it was the landing place of a fireball from, I think, about 10 years ago. I could be wrong of when the timing was, but like Oumuamua, it had a weird trajectory, the way it entered, the way the fireball entered. According to Avi Loeb, the fireball was like, okay, that could be an interstellar traveler because of its weird trajectory, weird velocity. So it lands in this part of the ocean. They sort of tracked it, and then as part of the Galileo Project, funded this exploration, and they put down these magnet sleds where they began to pull up, because he, I assume, expected to find what he found, which are these spherules, these weird tiny little
millimeter-sized
balls, which are composed of apparently high levels of uranium, high levels of materials that apparently eliminate many, many options of any sort of traditional meteorite, asteroid. I'm out of my depth scientifically, so I'm. But
and he turned whatever it was into these micro balls. The
explosion, yes, kind of desiccated this thing into this kind of state, and yet the materials inside these spherules apparently suggest an interstellar origin. I love his theory of like space litter. Like, I think that makes a lot of sense, you know, assuming we're still talking about our space-time world and traditional physics and whatever. Space litter makes, shit with just like old, you know, ancient from somewhere else is just floating through, and we might be able to spot it, and it might be somebody's Diet Coke can from a civilization 10 billion years ago or something. But that to me is a fairly logical approach to this. And so they are now studying these little balls, which he is suggesting, like he thinks it's a kind of like AI thing. Like he thinks it's a sort of, he hasn't gone to that extent in the paper, but
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
He's all, you know, he believes these are sort of in, there's a willful, like this was sent kind of thing. But it's being peer reviewed, I guess, in like Harvard and Berkeley, and they're all going to look at these little iron balls or whatever they are to kind of back him up. But it's a fairly mainstream scientific expedition that does, you know, that because he's looking for stuff that's landed here that might not be the most. I mean, even though he's accused of his by some peers, like the New York Times did their usual, like, we'll pick one guy that doesn't like him and just give them a whole article to sort of, you know, kind of trash him.
Dave Barry hated him. Oh, God, hard to repeat.
No, it's like one person in like Arizona was like, eh, fucking guy. I don't know. It seems I'm interested in that kind of investigation as well, because that could yield as many answers as, I don't know, like.
Yeah,
taking DMT and just talking with the elders. You know,
yeah. Remember the meteorite, the Martian meteorite that had the tiny life form in it. I think there's still trying to
fossilized, yeah, microbes, yeah, and yeah, there's
whatever.
Clinton did a big speech about that.
Clinton did.
You guys remember?
Clinton made a big speech. They cut it into the movie Contact.
Yeah,
and also. But I'm saying, that's the one thing that gets me, that when we find these like fossilized possible microbial fossils in Mars, it was like weeks of coverage at the time. And, yeah. You know, and then like after in the 2017, when the New York Times tells a story that, oh, there's a top secret UFO program in the Pentagon. Oh, and here's some videos of UFOs that the Pentagon admits are real and they don't know what they are. Oh, and they're traveling at Mach 30. And, oh, and they're going from 80,000 feet to sea level in just under a second. And so all of that news spreads.
Mike, they dissolved the Taj Mahal. Check it out.
All that news comes out and almost no follow-up, almost no, like, basically it's in the New York Times and the next day it's like, all right, everyone move on. It's just the difference in level of attention being paid to, you know, these microbes from Mars, and the fact that the Top Gun pilots are seeing ships that they can't catch, you know.
Yeah, one's a little easier to handle, right? One's a little like there's microbe on Mars, like okay, like I can handle microbe on Mars, like, you know, Tic Tac out flying my Top Gun pilot, less fun. Yeah. You know, that's getting a little intimate. I mean, I just think the more intimate this thing gets, the more people want to like, okay, you know. But it's going one direction, and you sort of, you know, we will need to steel ourselves to, whether it's tomorrow or 5 years from now or 15 years from now, there's going to be a real paradigm shift. I don't know. I thought the hearings 2 weeks or whatever it was, 3 weeks ago, fast Jesus. I mean, it was spilling out of David Grush and spilling out of these pilots. And it's just, you know, and then it seems like there's been a little cleanup, right? It seems like there's been like, oh, well, let's, you know, we set up the Arrow program, whatever the hell it's called, and they'll deal with like it. I don't know. Am I wrong? Do you guys get that impression? It felt like the forces of darkness were sort of.
There's definitely moves. There was, they're blocking them from having a Senate subcommittee with subpoena power to do more hearings. What's his name? I forget his name. Who's basically come out. Basically, he was told, well, we really can't keep doing this. It's going to embarrass the Department of Defense.
Oh, well, you can't do that.
Yeah. So they're trying to block him from doing having subpoena power.
It's going to embarrass them that they haven't been able to reverse engineer stuff fast enough, or that they're being outclassed by aliens. I don't think there's anything to be ashamed about being outclassed by aliens.
They might have murdered some people.
Oh, okay.
They may have murdered some people, and they may have stolen billions of dollars, and I mean, that's part of Grush's thing is that they've basically been illegally siphoning money out of military programs into these programs.
So this, and the aliens know it. That's why they're here.
Aliens are like,
yeah,
give me some of that.
yeah, I want a percentage.
Give me some of that.
I don't know what's going on. I feel like in a larger sense that like maybe now there's stuff coming out that were visited in waves by different civilizations. Like maybe back in the 50s, there was a group of people that had like the spinning top saucers with high collars or something, and they were sighting for a while. And then later there was little green men or grays or whatever. And you know, then there was my triangle wave with the belt. There was a Belgian triangle wave.
Yeah.
You know, you know, maybe it's different civilizations, and maybe they're more at ease with this one. That this one is one that they feel like they can release. You know, yeah. Sun Ra says there are worlds that they have not told you of. So yeah. You know, they know this stuff the way they know how much you make in taxes, but they still make you do the taxes to see what you say. That's what they're playing here, man.
That's the game.
I don't know what the government's game could be anymore, because like the whole world is involved. I'm sure the aliens aren't dealing with just the United States. The Indians just landed on the South Pole of the moon. You know, and maybe the shard on the back of the moon is like this big, crazy transmitter that goes out into the galaxy that we can't see because we never send stuff back there.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like,
yeah. Well, I think also the other argument for why they're keeping these things secret is that the technology behind the propulsion system that these craft use. I mean, we had a conversation with Gary Nolan a ways back that we just not part of the podcast. But he said, well, what if this technology can be turned into a weapon that our country's trying to figure out a way to reverse engineer this technology. So are the Russians, so are the Chinese. And whoever gets there first, you could use it as a source of energy for the world, or a means of travel or a way to escape our own planet. Or you can, you know, he said, you know, it could be a technology that Gary Nolan said, it could be a technology that allows a terrorist group to be able to grab hold of an asteroid and redirected it to Earth if they want.
Yeah. Yeah. I.
So there's dangers.
You don't
dangers.
Want that.
No, you there's dangers.
You don't want that.
No. Yeah.
He was also he also made the interesting case of like, you know, it's not a super organized conspiracy. It's a old conspiracy put together by old guys a long time ago. And that's kind of why all the holes in the dam are starting to kind of, it's why there's all the kind of leaks, and it's just a creaky old, you know, something put in place.
It's like our relationship with Cuba. Why are we still doing this?
Yeah.
Yeah. It's this old belief system.
Is it a generational fear, do you think? Do you think that when the boomers and the greatest generation is gone, there that was a little before their time, unless you believe the final countdown.
Well, it does seem generational. Yeah, because I mean it's these young guys like Lou Elizondo, who ran ATIP, you know, and David Grush and David Fravor, who are younger than their commanding officers. They seem to be the ones who are kind of, they don't care anymore. Ryan Graves, another fighter pilot, they all seem like they're coming forward and they're just saying, I don't care about the stigma. I don't care about protecting the Department of Defense. I think there is a generational shift in amongst the people in the Department of Defense. I think there's younger people who want to stop this.
I think too, if there's a generational shift, then there's, like you said, that they can take this, it's a race to reverse engineer the technology. And knowing Earth, as I think I know Earth, yeah. will make a weapon out of it. And what, because we're dicks. And so I think that, that the generation that would turn it into a weapon is wrestling with a generation that would like to turn it into something that would make food and propulsion and, you know, clean power, you know, beam down from orbit kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. You know, so, instead of giving money to the Department of Defense, we want to give it to NASA to, you know, grow tomatoes and stuff in orbit. And you're having a rage against the dying of the light with these old military guys.
Yes. Instead of like getting MIT to finally give us flying cars.
Yeah. I don't want flying cars, though. By the way, I don't. People can barely drive land cars.
Like Saturday night, I got to worry about fucking like the high school kids down the street, like just shooting their car into my house, you know, because they're fucked up. You know, I don't need that.
Guys, your house will have a force field. I don't know why you're. What are you worried about?
It's a propulsion field.
We'll all have a. We'll all have force fields.
Oh, man.
Yeah,
we'll wear headbands.
I think I buy the sort of creaky generational theory, and I think that there's kind of a new breed of attitude that is like, why can't I say what I saw? Why can't I tell what I saw? What is this sort of old idea of like you just don't fucking talk about it?
Because, why is Mr. Reitenauer laughing at me?
I know. Well, why? It was built in. It was built into the culture, right? Yeah. It was a trained response.
Avi Loeb got the same response from other astronomers when he said Oumuamua was a light sail. Basically, Mr. What was his name? Reitenauer.
Yeah, Mr. Reitenauer. Teacher's name.
Yeah, Mr. Reitenauer. Yeah, he got the Reitenauer from the academics. And it still is.
I had a football coach named Mr. Sweatlock. I mean, what is it about these people? Do they go into the profession that their name leads? I mean, is that how it works? That they just, I mean, I don't know about Mr. Right Now, or it just might have been very punctual, but.
I had a phys ed teacher named Your Parents Don't Need to Know This.
Dave Foley, ladies and gentlemen.
Yeah, thank you. That's all he heard. It's interesting days, right? These are good times. I want to see what's going to happen. I think there's going to be crazy shit. I'm prepping my kids. Like, I don't know what's going to, but there's going to be it's going to be an interesting decade. I feel like this is one of those sort of waves. Like, it feels like there was a World War II wave, looked like we were going to bomb the shit out of each other as a species. And it felt like UFOs popped up all over the place. And they're like, let's look at these guys. They're really close. And then kind of the nuclear 50s wave, right? All these bombs start coming around, and then you have all these stories and Roswell. And it feels like I have this idea that AI is making them kind of go like, oh God, like what are they? They know what they're doing. They just keep wanting to kill each other. Like that. How are they going to deal with this technology? And that to me, if there's any kind of pattern, it seems like they swarm when we're getting a hold of something we probably shouldn't get a hold of, or we're not ready to handle yet. So Maybe they'll come out and grab it from us or something.
They're here to solve the whole streaming issue.
can they settle the strike? That would be a
decent
amazing.
Way to put residuals into it. Well,
AMPPP unfair. Beep. What is love? Beep beep. I would be interested to see what an AI would. I'm not a big AI fan, but I would be interested to see what an AI thinks about what is happening, like what its conclusion would be, given all the evidence. It would probably say, "Yeah, well, obviously, there's something crazy going on." They're not afraid. They're not afraid to talk. They're not like people, right?
Yeah, true. They're not. Yeah, you can't shame AI yet. That's when we'll know it's sentient. When we can shame it.
Yeah, we have to. When it's afraid to tell us.
Yeah.
When it doesn't want to get laughed at.
Well.
Mr. Right Now or Why? Beep, beep.
Look what he set in motion.
Yeah, you know, I think another thing too that's odd to me is like you were saying that there should be more interest that UFOs are real and people are talking in Congress. Oh yeah, we saw this crazy stuff and F-18 pilots are going, oh my God, you're taking pictures with aliens and stuff. But I wonder if just there's so much going on here in these end times that people just can't get any traction. It's like, aliens, whatever. There's a submarine exploded. Yay, aliens, whatever. Musk is going to fight Zuckerberg in a cage match. It's like people have already moved on to the next TMZ thing. Is that?
Yeah. I think it's just we've been so very, very well conditioned to not think about UFOs, or most people have anyway, or to not talk about them, or to, you know, and certainly our media and our, you know, have certainly been very conditioned to not talk about it since going back at least to the, you know, to the 50s, and to just ignore it. And that if you don't ignore it, then you're a crazy person. So we'll ignore you. So anyone who doesn't ignore it is ignored.
And it's a military style ostracization.
Yeah, and it works. And you experienced it in your school. You know, that's the process. The fact that you have the fact you can make fighter pilots, people who fly really dangerous machines that could explode at any moment, into a place where other people in really dangerous machines want to kill them. These people will do that fearlessly, but then they'll see a UFO and be afraid to talk about it. I mean, that's the power of ridicule.
Yeah. I wonder, and I hate to bring this element into it, but I wonder how much religion is involved, especially with like Air Force. I know the Air Force is very religious. And I don't know if it speaks to it in other countries, how their militaries deal with this kind of stuff. But
might be why the Soviet Union took it more seriously and investigated it more thoroughly than we did, maybe because of the atheist.
I mean, certainly superpowers don't want to seem or appear toothless or powerless to something. I mean, I think there's that psychological aspect of like, I'm not, you know, I mean, again, I've played in my mind, like, what does Biden do? Like, what does he go? He goes up and he's like, my fellow Americans, like, we have no idea what this stuff is. It's there and it's kind of better than us, or it's powerful. It could probably just like vaporize us, but we don't know what they are. We don't know. I'm like, it's a tough job for a speechwriter to put that one together. Everybody go about your business. Your thing.
They can watch you 24 hours a day, 7 days a week.
Oh, by the way. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. And they can take you anytime they want.
It makes the case for the religious generals. It honestly does. Like, I mean, I also think despite all that, this is a serious, like the friction at this moment is in my lifetime hasn't been, there's a lot of smoke, like whether or not, I mean, I think they still have to drag a UFO out of the garage to get everyone's attention, because I do think the social media and Twitter, like, I don't think people trust what they see so much on these, you know, on our screens or what's going on. But I think despite all of this, there is still this kind of, I don't know, it feels like labor pains. Something is kind of, you know, trying to reveal itself, be revealed. Forces are clearly trying to push, you know, some truth out there that there's a case against it in terms of, and also like religious, no one wants to be made irrelevant, right? I mean, it's like the certain religion, you know, could become just irrelevant. You know, the business of religion could become, you know, profoundly challenged by these revelations. So I'm making both cases, guys. I don't know what I believe anymore. I'm torn.
Or will the aliens just sort of say, hey, you know, we're okay with letting you guys go about your business as long as you pretended you didn't know we were here, you know? Mm-hmm. But now we're going to have to do something.
I wonder if they would want to not tell us, just because it's like, why tell somebody they have a benign thing that they would worry about? You know what I mean? Like you were saying, hey, there's this thing that's better than us and we can't stop it. It's just out there. Just let me know. See you later.
Yeah.
Visit our website. It's better than people just they can't freak out about it. Because, you know, we want to see the aliens, or we want to talk to the aliens, or we want to fight the aliens. People get wound up in the wrong kind of ways, not knowing what they were fighting against.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's crazy. The cool thing, though, so weirdly, it's like the only one of the few bipartisan things happening out there right now. Kind of like no one's picked it for their side yet.
Republicans and Democrats are ready.
Do you feel like a fear is that countries don't want to come together to represent Earth as one big unified thing? They don't want the one world thing to face off against the aliens. That they're worried that that other countries are gonna buddy up to the aliens first.
Well, I think there's certainly a ton of people out there that believe the whole thing is a psyop. Just so that they can introduce a one world government and force us to wear masks and stop and eat crickets. That's sucking.
I think we found my line. We was asking like, Dave, what's his line? Like, is there a place where we'd stop? I guess I have a problem with the whole like handshake with the alien on that tarmac thing between like world leaders or.
Yeah. Eisenhower.
It feels a little too literal to me. Like the alien will come and shake hands with the president and make some backroom deal. I still think it's probably just too weird for us to comprehend, and for them to try to explain something to us if they're this technologically capable to slip in and out of our reality and fucking do whatever they. I don't know if we'll speak the same language. I don't know. We don't have the same interests. You know, they're taking things from us that we don't know what they're doing with, you know,
I think they're the autonomy that they have. They don't need to have a deal with us.
On their own terms. Yeah. Now, have you heard Einstein said that flying saucers weren't extraterrestrials, that they were ultra-terrestrials, that flying saucers were time machines, and that they operated the way their effects were described, the effects of things that were traveling through time, and that and the aliens, the descriptions of aliens described beings, beings that were super evolved humans, giant heads, small withered, you know, arms and legs and stuff. Do you think there's anything to that? I mean, because then you get into time travel.
It's as likely as anything. Yeah. Also, I think that if they are coming from somewhere else, they could also be time travelers. As I said before, they could, and they may have really just arrived here half an hour ago, but they experience time differently. They may have arrived here at all points in history at the same time.
Yes.
But maybe in their time frame, they've only been here about a half an hour, and they're still sizing us up. you know.
I mean, wouldn't they have to be time travelers to get here, even from, you know, super duper spy? I mean, there would have to be some sort of manipulation to even accommodate getting here. I think by our understanding, yes. I mean, I could also probably buy into the idea that we've been sharing this space unaware of something else.
Something that evolved before us.
You know, like that something could be sort of chilling, maybe needing the same resources as we do in some capacity that is super ahead. I don't know.
A species that was going, well, the dinosaurs were fun. Who's next? Oh, mammals.
Yeah, maybe it's a species that's sort of living in a ultraviolet dimension right next to us, because, you know, you look at the universe through different filters and it's a completely different scene. You know, the way flowers are different colors to bees, aliens probably can see, you know, Jack Kirby swirls all through the cosmos. You know, aliens wouldn't have the same kind of eyes. They would develop on a planet with different radiations, so they would have, you know, different visual receptors, or, you know,
think about the way a bat experiences the world. A bat experiences the world in 360 degrees, through echolocation. So it has a total awareness of its surroundings, as opposed to us with these stupid things. You know, going, oh, I better scan around. Like, a bat just knows everything that's everywhere around it all the time.
Yeah, and I mean, would it be how many? This was something else I read that was kind of interesting. It's like dolphins are very intelligent. They've been here for 20 million years, and they haven't invented anything. Mm-hmm. You know, there's no dentistry or aspirin or schools or anything, but they're happy. They're fine. So how many planets are covered with intelligent species that just don't care? They're not interested in leaving their cradle. Why would you want to?
Yeah,
it's impossible to get there without, you know, being your DNA being degraded by X-rays.
Yeah.
Oh, and there can be no question that there have to be millions of civilizations. Like, I mean, the numbers don't even.
There's they never made it out of the.
There's simply no way that there aren't. So I imagine we would be a kind of, you know, novel, like, check on them, see what they're up to, but don't go near them. I mean, don't try to play with them. They're nuts. They're sort of, you know, we've got kind of big toys that are destructive, and we're otherwise still like screaming at each other, freaking out, you know. I mean, even with this being arguably one of the most sort of peaceful stretches of our history, it's still fucking nuts down here. So, I mean, I think anyone would be like, just like look at them, you know, maybe slip in, check them out, maybe study one, pluck one, you know. But
I saw
we'd have to be one of the youngins.
Lost you there.
Oh, I said I saw a big fight at the Galleria, so I don't think we're ready for it.
No.
That'll do it. That'll make you go like, just leave us alone, aliens. One good brawl at the Galleria will do it.
Yeah. Well, I think as we go on this, at some point I have to finish rewatching all the episodes of The X-Files with my daughter tonight. I think we have to watch all the entire season series.
Really? That's a big undertaking.
Yeah, I know.
You gotta get going.
I know. But I'm saying, we've been rewatching the X-Files, and it's very different watching the X-Files now after seeing the all the stuff that's happened since 2017. There's a certain quaintness.
Someone was telling me it sort of holds, like, is it quaint? I mean, someone was like saying, like, oh, they kind of had their, like, pretty cool beat on some of this stuff.
They had a lot of it. They definitely had, the writers of that show were definitely steeped in the UFO history.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know, sometimes I wonder though how much of the UFO, all the conspiracy and the government, the surreptitious things that are supposed to be going on with secret societies, I wonder how much of that is just complete hot air and just, you know, the aliens are operating at a different level and we're just kind of doing whatever we can to keep up. I don't really think I don't think we have anything. I wouldn't think that we have a deal with them yet. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I don't. Yeah, I mean, I don't. Yeah, I don't think the Galactic Federation has extended membership to us. But every time I think that, every time I think something like that, where I go, well, that's all crazy. Then, you know, a few months later, I'm going, oh, it's not crazy. Oh,
yeah,
I know. It does do that to you. I don't believe in these super organized conspiracies because it just doesn't seem to be the way any of it works. Like, it all seems so messy when you look up close. Like, it just, government seems so like seat of its pants, barely figuring out last week's problem. Like, it just, I can get the idea of a very small need to know thing that has sort of, you know, kind of aged because no one knows what the fuck to do with it. I can kind of get that. I have that, a lot of that in my house, right? I don't know what to do with this. I'm going to put it in the shed and I'm going to forget about it because I just can't either. It's got no place in the house right now. It's got no real meaning. Like, I, no utility or function. We'll just put it away. I guess I can get my head around that. And maybe that constitutes a major conspiracy, but I feel like the overall disorganization of humanity is it like the Rosicrucians and the symbols and this, and it's all in the, you know, Mona Lisa, Da Vinci. I think they'd be kind of like at a different level. I think you're right, Blaine. It puts us at a level of security of like, oh yeah, like we got our secret societies, we'll talk to their secret societies and we'll kind of, they'll sort it out in this back room. But
yeah, humanity is not organized. I don't know if you've ever gone to Vegas and tried to organize meeting for breakfast with other couples, but there's no way these conspiracies are happening.
Just expand that. Yeah. Just build it out. It's like, nope. The buffet is beyond us. Right.
It's good natured. I mean, we're not idiots, you know,
you get there.
Yeah.
But it's a fine metaphor.
I mean, I wouldn't trust us with aliens at this point.
No. No. But a damn good chat.
Yeah, I like Blaine.
Oh, this was awesome. My pleasure. Thanks for not laughing at me when I told you about what I saw. I wish I could find the thing.
Well, not right here. Not right here. Face. We're, you know.
No, man. That's where
my mom and dad saw too, but they're dead. I can't call them up. It's just
Well, as I said, I'm
Billy Pilgrim.
Yeah, having now seen a UFO myself, I have a.
Now, where was yours? Tell me about yours. I'm sorry to do this at the very end. Tell me about yours.
Oh, okay. Well, I'll very quickly, but I saw it with my friend Jeremy Corbell. We were out walking his dog at night, and literally, I was looking at what a beautiful night it was. I was looking at the commercial air traffic off in the distance, and I literally said, Jeremy, tonight would be a good night to see something. And like 30 seconds later, Jeremy goes, Dave, turn around. And there's this orangey gold glowing object on the horizon that circles three quarters of this valley that we're in, hangs in front of us for about a minute, and then disappears behind the mountains. And for the whole time, Jeremy and I didn't speak. We didn't react. We were quiet. And except for one point where Jeremy goes, I'm not even going to take a picture. And that's the only thing. And I'm going, that's weird. But again, I didn't say it to him. I just quietly kept watching this thing.
Did it make a noise?
No sound. It was about, and we guessed that it was about the size of a Mack truck, you know.
Fuck.
And
how close was it to you guys?
Remind me. I think it was probably just a few miles from us in the sky.
And how high up would you estimate?
I'm trying to think how high the mountains are there. So it was above the height of the mountains. So maybe 1,000 feet up.
Okay.
Yeah.
It's weird when things that big are moving. I mean, you know, I know planes and helicopters, and when things aren't moving like that, your animal, your ears move like a cat. What is happening over there?
Yeah.
So it's you can tell when something is wrong. Yeah. But right for them.
Yeah, but as I said, it was a weird experience, and it was literally like I asked for it and it showed up. Wow. And
a big truck would overturn in front of me. Turn around.
Oh, it's so weird that how that does. I mean, the more we hear about it, the suggestion seems, I don't know, to be somewhat of a component here.
Well, it's like Jacques Vallée kept saying, there's the physical nuts and bolts of these things, and then there's also a connection with consciousness. You know,
yeah.
And that whatever these things are, they're able to decide who they want to be seen by and when, and they're able to interact with your consciousness is the best I can describe it. Like the fact that Jeremy and I weren't excited and didn't talk about it for the whole thing. We were just dead calm for the whole thing.
Well, you're riveted, right? You're trying to soak up every second, and your brain is trying to catch up to, because it doesn't have an association to anything. So, I mean, my various non UFO specific moments where I still felt like something other was happening, it's like two parts going on. Like, I want to be here. I want to be here in this moment. I want to take it all in as much as possible. But I'm also like, I'm filtering it through, like, okay, is it this? Is it that? Is it this? Is it that? You know,
yes.
And
yeah,
it's your brain. It's so that's kind of just going to freeze you. You know, you don't have a lot of room left for like, oh, and by the way, there's this dance I'm thinking about, or like, I'm going to take, you know.
Yeah. My brain down. All the way through it, I was just going, okay, all right. Still not boring. Okay. Still not boring. All right. It's really close now and it's still not boring. I kept waiting for it to be something boring and ordinary. And as it got closer and closer and closer, just going, oh, okay.
It's fucking nuts, man. It's really crazy.
You didn't get worried that it was coming at you, did you?
No, there was no worry. No, not even awe. There wasn't even awe. It was just, okay. All right. Okay. And then when it went behind the mountains, Jeremy goes, dude, that was a UFO.
and he would know.
Yeah,
I mean, because
and my response was, yeah, it was. That was it.
did anybody else report that? Did you look it up? Did you Google it?
Not that I've ever heard. I think Jeremy did some checking, and he never heard anything.
Yeah. Damn.
All right.
Yeah, it's hard to compute, and your brain is like, what is it? Instead of just kind of relaxing and being in the moment.
Yeah. Well, as I said, my feeling was that the thing we were looking at was in charge of our response. It was controlling our response. And,
oh, dear.
And that basically there was a sense of that we should just stay calm and pay attention. And that was it. So for the entire experience, I was just very calmly paying attention to all the details, and that was it.
Hypnotized by the lights.
Yeah, and just like, and again, it felt calm and rational, and I was just like going, all right, yeah, all right, I can see that. I'm looking at this. I'm gauging its speed and what it's doing, and oh yeah, there's no sound, but it was all none of it. It was none of that, like, you know, the when you see the, you know, the videos on YouTube. What the fuck is that? Yeah, fuck, yeah, man, yeah. This is fucking fuck. What the fuck? Oh, fuck. You know, none of that.
Yeah, if you say although that, they hear you, and then they have ray guns.
Yeah.
They come down, they're coming against you with ray guns.
Yeah.
There's a great video of this guy calling for his calling for his wife. It's pretty awesome though. It's like, I don't know what, I wouldn't even know how to find it, but it was like it's a UFO video of like, get out of here. He's trying to, like, you know, because he's seeing it. She never gets out in time, you know, and it's like, oh my God. But yeah, that would be me. I'd just be screaming for Christina. Yeah. Get out of here. Where are you? What's going on?
It's like snuffling. It just shows up when everybody's gone. Nobody believes you.
Ugh. Well, we believe you, Blaine. Yeah. God damn it.
Yeah, thanks for telling the story.
Nice.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
It was great to meet you.
Great to meet you too. Thank you very much for having me, guys.
And I hope we can in some small way ruin Mr. Reitenauer's life.
He's got, I mean, I'm
or Mr. Reitenauer.
47 years ago in fifth grade. Guy's gotta be. If he was 35 then, he's got yeah. Yeah. I'm not too worried about Mr. Reitenauer. I feel bad.
Nature's taking care of Mr. Reitenauer.
Teachers, but
he mocked a child. He mocked a child.
Taking its course. Nature's taking its course with him. But awesome. Awesome. So great to talk with you. This was,
you too.
And we'll do it again. But thank you, buddy.
Great to see you.
Thank you. Thanks, guys.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Kayla Itzinas.
Kayla Itzinas. I'm Kayla Itzinas, and I have been training a global community of women since 2009. I've created a brand new podcast, Sweat Daily, to help you level up your life and reach your health and well-being goals. From fitness tips to food that fuels you, meditation to motivation, we've got you covered. Sweat Daily, the happiest, healthiest, and most confident version of you awaits. Available on Apple Podcasts and wherever you get your podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.